The Public News Service Daily Newscast, April 21st, 2023. I'm Mike Clifford. Public libraries are known for their quiet settings, but in the coming days, staff leaders in the South Dakota area and elsewhere will be vocal about the threat library systems around the country are facing.
Monday, April 24th has been designated Right to Read Day by the American Library Association. Daniel Berniston of the Vermilion Public Library says creating awareness about the freedom to read is important when the censorship movement is showing no clear signs of slowing down.
When we start heading down a road of censorship, you know, is where we start eroding those core tenets of democracy, the First Amendment, free speech, and people's right to access, read, and review materials.
The ALA recently announced that 2022 saw a record number of demands to censor library books and materials. Fueled by right-wing activists, most of the titles they tried to remove were written by or about members of the LGBTQ community and people of color. Separately, there was a failed attempt this session in the South Dakota legislature to prohibit library materials deemed obscene. I'm Mike Moen.
As part of Right to Read Day, the ALA suggests several actions for supporters, including barring a book at risk of being banned. And a Virginia group is working to bolster the state's healthcare workforce. The Virginia Rural Health Association's Workforce Initiative is a collaboration with local workforce boards to train people in a variety of healthcare jobs.
The initiative has a multi-year grant, and now that its first year is wrapping up, Danielle Montague with the Virginia Rural Health Association says they'll make changes depending on the feedback they receive.
I think it's going to be really important for us to bring on some participants that have gone through the actual programs and gain employment so we can hear from their perspectives and hear more from what they need of us.
An overarching goal of the initiative is to fill gaps in rural health care, but Montague says it isn't just a rural issue. A National Association of Community Health Centers report finds more than 3 million people in Virginia are medically disenfranchised, meaning they have no or inadequate access to primary care services. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
President Biden and his team preparing to announce his re-election campaign next week. Aides finalizing plans to release a video for the president to officially launch the program. That for the Washington Post. They report Biden and his aides have targeted Tuesday for the release of the video that would coincide with the four-year anniversary of his 2020 campaign launch. The Post notes for months that Biden has signaled he planned to run for a second term, but he's held off an official announcement. This is Public News Service. A funding hub is launched in Indiana, designed to help small communities pursue federal funding for climate, energy, and resilience projects.
It's called the Indiana Resilience Funding Hub, and its mission is to assist communities with fewer than 50,000 residents access billions of dollars for their projects. Bill Brown, the Assistant Director for Strategy and Engagement at Indiana University, feels a lot of communities are somewhat overwhelmed by the magnitude of opportunities available through the Inflation Reduction Act, which invests $369 billion in energy security and climate change mitigation over the next 10 years.
Our goal for this pilot year is to work with 5 to 8 communities and help them get started on the path to applying for grant funding. We've found out that there are a lot more communities out there that are interested, that are looking and talking to us about projects that they would like to move forward.
Brown says grant money can help small communities make an impact by providing funding for projects like replacing street lighting with LED lighting. He says LED is not only cheaper than traditional lighting, but also reduces greenhouse gas emissions. I'm Joey Graham reporting.
Earlier this year, the Federal Trade Commission said it intends to ban non-compete agreements, and hundreds of people have submitted comments on the proposed rule change.
Non-compete terms bar workers from joining a competing business or starting their own business for a set period of time after leaving a job. Teofilo Reyes with Restaurant Opportunity Centers United calls it a cruel practice meant for employees in more advanced fields, and says it shouldn't be used for service workers and others who earn lower wages.
It's a detriment to workers. It makes it harder for them to use knowledge that they've gained to improve their wages, improve their position, because they can't easily transfer from one job to another.
Supporters of non-compete clauses argue that they protect a company's confidential information. Mary Sherman reporting.
Finally, our Alex Gonzalez tells us Japanese Americans gather this weekend for memorial events at the World War II Topaz internment camp in Delta and in Salt Lake City, that to mark the 80th anniversary of her murder.
In 1943, James Wakasa was walking his dog inside the internment camp when an army guard shot and killed him, alleging Wakasa was trying to escape. A Topaz camp descendant, Ann Tamaki Dion, is president of Friends of Topaz, a group that actively supports the Topaz Museum in Delta. Dion, a third-generation Japanese-American, says several of her family members lived or were born at the internment camp.
We happened to be a targeted group in 1942, but this can certainly happen to any other group in the United States.
This is Mike Clifford. Thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service, member and listener supported. Here are some great radio stations, your favorite podcast platform. Find our trusted indicators at publicnewsservice.org.